I was recently watching a video from a fellow YouTuber teacher named CJ Reynolds. He's this inspiring teacher out in Philadelphia that makes me want to be a better teacher. But he was talking about what he does on the first days of school.
It's a rainy evening here in Philadelphia, so I thought I'd make a video because I have this new idea that I think you might like, because I've gotten this question a lot in recent comments and emails and stuff like that. So the question I get is, how do I start my year? And in particular, what does my first day look like?
And he starts the video with what I feel is a pretty important caveat.
So I really like this question, but before I tell you what I do and how I start my year, I first want to say that I don't know that there's a wrong way to do this. There's ways that I prefer to do it, and there's ways that you might prefer to do it. Like my friend Cho, that's been on the live feed before, starts it as a badass because she's a badass. And I have other friends that like to run through all of the rules on the first day. I have all other friends that like want to jump right into it, and they give some sort of like test on the first day to kind of see where the students are. I have other friends that just kind of like will give you like a play-by-play of like how they became a teacher, who they are, where they're from. And I think all of those can work. It just depends on your personality and what feels best to you. What I would implore you to do is figure out what might work best for you and then do that. Don't just do what someone else does because you think that's what you're supposed to do. And if you mess it up, there's always next year, unless you quit. Then there's only this year, so you better get it right the first time.
And so CJ goes into a little bit of how he greets students.
I start class by shaking every hand that comes in my door.
He shares a little bit of what he decides not to do on the first day.
And instead of giving rules, instead of giving procedures, instead of putting kids where they're supposed to be seated, instead of handing out a syllabus, instead of handing out a questionnaire, instead of doing an icebreaker, instead of doing any of the other stuff, I like to tell the kids how awesome the year's gonna be, how excited I am to be here, and I like reminding them of the fact that I like to teach.
And I think it was that part of the video that stuck out to me, because I thought to look at my brand new students and tell them how awesome the year was going to be, I better be able to follow through on that. But also, I told students that I really work hard to become a good teacher, but I don't know how often I've told students that I really love teaching. And so I made sure to include that this year on the first day of school. After that, he elaborates on what it is that's going to make the school year great as far as the projects and the trips we're going to go on. And then he goes into a little bit of how he develops culture in his classroom and how his classroom's a safe space for all the students. And he ends the video with this one project that he does with his incoming freshmen.
That later. But I put up a very simple slide on the board that asks you about yourself. And I ask you to write a letter to yourself. I've done this for more than a decade, and every year on the first day of school, before you really know me, before you know the kids in your class, before you know the other teachers in the building, I want you to write a letter about yourself. And I've made whole videos about that, and I can link it up here somewhere. But the short of it is I want a snapshot of who you are now so that when you graduate, I can give that letter back to you. So where do you live? Who do you live with? What's your favorite group? What's your favorite band? What's your favorite song? What do you want to be when you grow up? What do you feel? How do you feel about the high school? What's your first impression? What girl or guy sticks out to you that you think you might want to talk to later? Who's your best friend? You know, all these things that can change over the next 4 years. And it's really an exercise in change and learning that things change and not always for the worse. And then on graduation evening, I give those letters back. Freshman year, you had me as a teacher. You wrote yourself a letter on the first day of freshman year.
Yeah!
And even if you don't go to our school anymore, I will try to find you wherever you graduate from or wherever you're working from or whatever your situation is and try and get that letter back to you.
And what I appreciate about that and what I value about that is it's showing his value of these young students and who they are in that moment, and then kind of sharing that gift of growth and self-reflection with them years down the road, a gift that maybe they would not have had otherwise. And he's communicating, I care about these next 4 years and the person that you're going to become in this time that you have in high school. All that to say, the video got me thinking about the first day of school, and I'll link the entire video in the show notes of this podcast. And if you're a teacher, you have devoted a lot of your time, particularly in the ends of summer, on how exactly you want your first day to go. One of the most popular books in education is The First Days of School by Harry Wong, which is all about setting up routines and procedures to develop that classroom culture. But I thought it'd be kind of interesting to explore this idea of the first day. Now being in my seventh year of teaching, I'm wondering, how do you balance the need for like rules and procedures with getting students really excited about being in your class? How do you make sure each student has a voice and they feel heard and seen on the first day of school? How do you not only build a positive relationship with the students, but impact their relationship with one another and their relationship to the content in a positive way? And what are students thinking about as they're coming into school on that first day? And how should that impact how we start the year? This is the Tom Gibson Podcast, and today we are exploring the first day of school. I sat down with my friend Tara, who has been in education for 20 years, and picked her brain on what she has learned about the first day of school and her experience in the classroom.
My name is Tara Lynch, and what I do is teach Spanish. I'm also a learning specialist. I am also a parent of two dyslexic kids, and I'm a parent advocate for children with dyslexia.
The first day of school. How important is the first day of school? If it is that important.
Okay. Great question, Tom. I would like to respond to the question about the first day of school in a more holistic way. I think that the first day of school is super important. It's also one of about 170-ish days. So if the first day doesn't go quite as I had hoped, I know that there are other days to make connections with students and build my relationship with students, which is what I think the first day and weeks are really about. I've made the mistake before of starting the year with content and really focusing on content. And oh my gosh, I have 3,000 years of history to teach. I can't wait. But I realized that that was diminishing returns and that kids are more open to learning when you've established some trust with them. And so I always spend the first days in general getting to know them. I do bring in content more as an organizer or perhaps connected to themes. But I really spend those first days allaying the children's fears because sometimes kids come to school with some baggage or past experiences about the content or about teachers or other kids that I try to be cognizant of. And one way I do that is structuring activities for us to gain each other's trust.
When you talk about like the ratio between how much should be academic and how much should be relationship building, I know in kind of my 7 years of teaching, I've kind of had a balance of the two. And there were years where I'm like, okay, it's like the second week of school and we're nearing the end. And I really haven't even gotten much into my content yet. Or other days where it's like, I start right off the bat. Where's that balance? And like, how do you know when it's time? Like, or do you know, is it different with every group of kids?
Yeah, I would say it does vary with each group of kids. I think one difference is whether or not I know the students yet. And then sometimes I get to know the students and then kind of go back to do something that I might have done with another class. And one example, there was one year I had a group of 32 kids, ninth graders, after lunch. I was just having a hard time getting the routine set up for the class. And so I paused and used this activity called compass points, where students have to think about what kind of person they are in the classroom. Are they a north? They jump right in. They want to get started without a lot of detail. Are they south? They look around and pay attention to others. Are they west? They're very organized, color coding. Or are they east? Looking at the big picture, wanting to find out lots of information. And when I did that with the students, I found out that almost everyone in the class was a north. And so that was really enlightening to me and to them because they realize, hey, I'm a North. I'm going to jump right in. But then they also realized, oh, it's hard. What's hard with working with a bunch of Norths is we may not have thought through all the details or we may want to talk over each other. And so it was really helpful for me to restructure my class to support who they were as learners. And then I think it was really important for them as well to realize the class dynamic and how the individuals had an impact on each other. And so I do like that one in the beginning of the year with students. I usually do that, or I like to do that with students I don't know. So there's no content there except how do we work as a group? And why do I do that? It's because that's an important part of what I want my students to learn in the classroom is self-knowledge, advocacy, communication with others, working with different kinds of people, and appreciating the different ideas and ways of thinking that can really add to a group, to a project, to a class, even if it's different from what they're used to or what they're comfortable with.
And what was that assessment called?
That's called compass points, sometimes known as north, south, east, and west. Yeah, and that one's really scalable. I've done it with middle school and high school and adults, actually.
And when we were talking beforehand, you were saying you're kind of a big fan of Harry Wong's First Days of School, which was kind of like my Bible of teaching when I first started. I read it almost every summer for like the first 3 or 4 years. But then I found like as the years progressed and, you know, at the current school that we're at right now, there's almost less of that structure of like routines and procedures. And for me, I wondered, is it just because I move schools? Is it just something that comes with experience and that naturally weaves itself in? How much emphasis do you feel teachers should be putting on coming in and not saying these are the rules, but these are the routines, these are the procedures, these are how we do the things that we're going to do in class, and what could that look like?
Yeah, I also, in my first years of teaching, reviewed that every summer, sometimes in January or February, just to get some reminders and tips. And like you, I've adapted it as well. And one way I've adapted it is to change, well, I guess it's sort of a Wongism. So one of the things that I love from that book is his point that when the teacher is doing all the work, the teacher is tired. But when the students are doing the work, they're learning / tired. And so I think I kind of applied that to setting the routines and rituals. And I really try to find ways to include the students in the creation of those rather than and not in a more deep way, because he does encourage the students to come up with the class rules, for example. But I've moved towards using norms, that they're something that you can adapt and change as time goes on. And then I think I've done a better job as time goes on and going back and reflecting on the norms and having the students work individually, which of these are coming easily for me, which ones do I need to work on, so that it really, I think that helps put the ownership more on the kids for the classroom itself, but also for the rules of the classroom. And I did work with a group. It actually was adults. And there were so many side conversations. I really was hoping that the group would come up with a norm about no side conversations. But what I realized in our debrief of the norms over several days is that this particular group had known each other for a really long time and hardly ever get to see each other. They had been teachers together and now were administrators spread out. And so that side conversation was something that I personally wanted to stop, but the group, that wasn't their priority. And so I had to let it go as a teacher for the sake of the group. So I had to sort of put my individual desires to the side and pay attention to the needs of the group. And I think that comes up with students as well, as they grow, as they open up, as they claim ownership of the class. And then they too have to learn how to take what they personally want and vet it with the group or come to consensus with the other individuals of the group.
That activity of kind of establishing norms, I've kind of struggled with it in the past few years, because I'm like, am I establishing norms really in the way of making a facade of saying, okay, kids, I really want you just to regurgitate the rules that you know I want you to say. And then middle schoolers and high schoolers kind of know how to play school and like, oh, no talking when someone else is talking. Be nice. Be respectful. How do you move past just kids telling you what they know you're expecting and making it something more meaningful?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. And I think that idea of the teacher having preconceived notions of what it should look like and students being sensitive to that is a really, it's a really important piece of what teaching is. And the idea of checking our own assumptions consistently is super important. And being open with the kids about that too, when you realize, oh, that rule is really for me, not for you. Yeah, I think we're lucky in this school where we really value and ask for student voice a lot. And so this is one of those areas where I'll be frank and talk about power dynamics in a classroom and how traditionally the teacher holds the power. But for me personally, I want to decentralize that power and move it to them. And so I ask them, after they come up with that first list of be nice, listen to the teacher, don't interrupt, ask them to think about kind of analyze, like, who has the power for this rule and whose voice is lost. So I think taking that first version that they're more used to doing after all these years, and then asking about and talking about power dynamics to drill down into more concrete and useful, perhaps more authentic norms. I find that's one way to do it. It doesn't necessarily happen on that first day, but usually there is someone who will pipe up and say, yeah, I've never really liked that norm because, and it bothers them.
I also sat down with a fantastic science teacher, Caitlin McDermott, and since she worked with 9th and 10th graders, I kind of wanted to get her thoughts on what is it like for the first day of students that are coming into high school for the first time and how she works with that dynamic.
My name is Caitlin McDermott, and I am a science guide at Headwater School in Austin, Texas. I work with freshmen and sophomores.
Caitlin, tell me about the first day of school. How important is the first day of school? Is it as important as some say it is?
For a teacher, I do not think it is important in that I don't think that it necessarily sets the tone for the whole year. I think it's incredibly important to the student, though. For me, it is mostly about getting my first day jitters out, because more so with the freshmen, it's a brand new group of kids. Sophomores, I taught last year, so I already have a pretty good rapport with them. But it's mostly just getting out the cobwebs after the summer. And I think the most important thing also in terms of how it feels to me is I want to set the tone of starting off the year with a sense of fun. So I never talk about the rubric on the first day. I never talk about what content we're going to cover. It's always a straightforward activity because I want them first and foremost to end the first day being like, this year is going to be really fun, or I'm going to have a lot of enthusiasm or a lot of energy. Yeah, I don't really do the logistic things the first day. So to me, it's less important for me, but I understand that creating a feel for the year is important for the kids.
So what kind of activities have you done in the past that have been really successful and really get the kids excited?
So we always do, not always, but usually in biology, I'll start with the prove that this is not a live activity. So I'll light a candle in the classroom. And of course, fire is always a positive if you can integrate it into anything. And I ask the kids to sit down with a group and prove to me that the candle is not alive. And so they'll sit down for about 10 minutes and they'll come up with ideas. And of course, initially they're like, yeah, of course it's not alive. That's a dumb question. But then they start to debate it and it gets really philosophical. So, well, the flame is moving. So living things often move. So that's really not a point towards it being, not alive. Or, well, it's not going to have babies. And inevitably one kid's going to take some of the wax and pour it out. And it says, that's a little baby of that candle. So it starts to get them thinking about, so life, the whole thing that we're going to be studying this year, is not as easy to define. And so that leaves, I love the debate that brings up, because it's not a very challenging debate in that it's not going to get controversial for the most part. And most kids are going to engage with it pretty easily. And it's kind of fun because it gets them talking with each other. I don't have to do a lot. I just have to set the stage. And it's more interesting to see the connections they make with each other right off the bat, because I can already start to see what the energy of the class is going to be like. In chemistry, we usually do the whoosh bottle experiment. We do a couple of them. Whoosh is a good one, where you take ethyl alcohol and you put it in like a big water jug that would be on a water cooler. You spin it around and it vaporizes the alcohol, and then you'll drop a match in and it creates this whoosh. But the kids don't know, or what they usually don't figure out till the end of class, is that it's sucking oxygen in, not spitting it out, because there's a big flame that comes out of it. And then there'll be a cloud that forms in there over the next couple of minutes as the water that has condensed because of its combustion reaction condenses in the bottle. And so that is a completely silent activity. So that's kind of getting them like, okay, how do you watch an experiment? How do you watch a phenomenon happen? How do you interpret it? So it's done. I don't tell them what I'm doing. I don't even let them know what I'm pouring to the bottles. Everything's covered up, so they don't even know it's going to the bottle. They see the match, but they don't know it's ethyl alcohol. They don't know why I'm aerating it, why I'm turning it around. So they have to write down everything they see, they smell, they hear. It's a very multi-sensory demonstration. And then they start to interpret what was important, what wasn't important. And then they start to discuss, after about 7 minutes of silence, what they think went on. And most of the time they can kind of figure it out. That's a really nice intro because, again, it kind of leads to the same thing that the bio one did, of you have to discuss what you've seen and why. And you have to justify your stance on something.
Yeah. What I like about those is, like, even though you said you're not really diving into content and everything, like you're not doing name games, you're not doing like, let's just get to know each other. But even though in the process you are getting to know the students and kind of hearing who's speaking up and who's not and trying to give everyone a voice. And as particularly that first activity though, you said it has like there's a very low barrier to entry. You don't have to be like a science kid to be able to make an observation or make a hypothesis or try to explain why fire isn't alive, which I think is important because I think for me, I'm like, I don't want to just do like the get to know you stuff. I really want to get into content, but I also want them to get excited about stuff. So finding that balance.
Yeah. And I think, and especially with chemistry, no matter what I do the first day, usually at the beginning of class, I'll always have a student say, I've never taken chemistry. I'm not a chemistry person, or biology is just, I never really get science. And so that is already a fear when kids come into class. So you have to set something with like a really low entry point, because that's the one thing I don't want to do is to dissuade a kid from having some buy-in at the very end of the first class. So it needs to be something that if they're an artistic thinker, they can, a lot of times kids will draw out what they saw happen in the whoosh demonstration, or, you know, you'll see them make tables for the pro cons of why the fire is alive or not alive. And so you start to see the way that they think, and then you can, you know, even if they're not the science kid, you start to see how you're going to get them to access being a science kid.
And so Caitlin emphasized that opportunity of creating that low barrier of entry for students. And in my conversation with Tara, we discussed the importance of all students feeling they have a voice early on, right in that first day.
So one of the things that I do like is just a simple pair share or turn and talk to practice listening. Listening is such an underrated skill. So often we just wait for time to pass so that we can respond. And so having students practice listening and reporting out on what another student says rather than reporting out on what they say is one way to help them practice that balance between me as an individual and me as part of a group and this person next to me who's also an individual. I also really like postcards because it's super flexible. This is one way you can bring in content. You can start with actual art postcards or content specific cards or images repeated. So you and I may have the same one, but a few other people have different ones. And you just stroll and have conversation about the image. Any connection you can make, anything you see, it's very low stakes, but it allows students to hear from someone else, and also to use evidence a little bit, like looking at the postcard. Do I see where they are getting this idea? Can I ask a follow-up question because of this? So I think that's a really great one, and you can start bringing in content that way as well.
Yeah, I've done something similar where in math class where I may have patterns. I usually do it like there's one pattern up on the board that everyone sees, but I could see it as like different tables or different postcards have a different pattern. And then it's like, what do you notice about this pattern? How is the series growing, or what's changing from this series of images to that series? But pulling in that part of, instead of saying, all right, who has an idea of a pattern they observed, like, can someone share the pattern that their neighbor observed?
Yeah.
Really adds into that community piece, I feel.
And I do think that is an area where on the first day, then I absolutely spend a minimum of time, really just a couple of minutes, as the person at the front speaking and get them talking right away, because studies have shown that in a group, if people don't speak in the first 5 minutes, then they tend not to speak. And that idea of voice, whether it's written, said to the group, said to a partner, on behalf of a partner, that's just so key to me, that from day one, I think that's the most important. That's what I always do day one, is make sure that they're doing that, and then being transparent about why I'm doing that, because that also helps set the expectations that this is how it's going to be in class. And then I can work with the students who may have trouble stepping into that role, or those who may have trouble stepping back from being the class speaker, for example. So it's another way I try to, yeah, that's something that I always do on the first day. The other things may change.
I also asked Caitlin and Tara if they had any first day flops as an educator.
I mean, there's so many flops in teaching. I mean, that's just the way that it goes. I don't know that the flops necessarily happen on the first day. To me, it's a flop if people are just quiet and not responding. I've learned, I don't know, again, if it's from the first day, but I like to be over-prepared in case my timing is off. I never want to be sitting there with nothing to do. But I think that that kind of comes with experience. You have a toolkit of things that you can pull out if you see a certain reaction that makes you think that it's not going the way that you want. I'm always nervous on the first day, for sure. I like to share that with the students when I can.
So my first day was at a boarding school in New Jersey. I was 24 or 25. It was my first teaching job. I remember going to my classroom about 2.5 hours early and just kind of sitting there and like looking around and doing really stupid tasks that were not necessary. Like I would straighten papers and make sure all the rulers were in the same box. So I think my anxiety got the better of me for those 2 hours. I remember them coming in and me, as soon as I saw the first kid come in and give just like a very, like they probably didn't even think about it, just like a little smile. I was like, okay, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And I think that first year I definitely did the, here's me, here's the rubric. Just because I had been told like that was kind of the standard at the school. Like you just get through the nitty gritty, the nuts and bolts that first day. And even though like I felt better after the day, like I felt like, okay, I've ripped off that Band-Aid. I also kind of felt icky. Like, I don't think they know or care what they're going to be doing in this class. And so I remember the second day, I made sure that we did a lab in all my classes. I was like, we're going to do something hands-on because I feel like I've already like lost some of y'all. And I was pretty transparent about that. And a lot of them were like, oh, I thought we were going to have to wait weeks before we got to do a lab. Or like my experience is like, you have to do all this, like, you know, at the beginning of the year, you talk about the scientific process and you write down who developed it and you write down the 5 steps and you define them. So jumping into it, like an activity and actually using that stuff, the foundational stuff at the beginning, was really important. So my first day was really boring. And I didn't feel great about it, but it was what I could do and what I needed to do at that point. And every year I feel like since then has gotten better. I've gotten more and more comfortable with just, you know, I don't know you, you don't know me, but let's just dive in head first, because the sooner we can do that, the sooner we're going to have fun together and enjoy each other's company. So I wish it had been different, but that's just the nature of it. It is what it is.
And it sounds like you recovered pretty quickly. I mean, by second day, you're like, all right, let's do something fun. Like, I remember my first day I was teaching fifth grade, and I had like my whole day's worth, because I had the same kids from class started at 7:30 till about 3:00. And I was done with my full days of lesson plans by like 9:45. So I was pretty thankful that I had like a pretty supportive administrator. The one of the vice principals came down and I was like, hey, I'm already done with everything. I don't know what to do. We've already played the games and did stuff. And she was just like, it's okay. Let's just take a tour of the school. We got a lot of new kids and we got this activity we can do. So she was really helpful, but yeah, that was, I think second day wasn't much better, but yeah. So, kudos for picking it up pretty quickly.
And so I was also interested in what students had to say about the first day of school and what their mindset is when they're going into a classroom for the first time. I had a feeling that it would probably be a little bit different than what teachers were thinking about on the first day. This is sixth grader Charlie.
Charlie, what was your thought process on your first day of sixth grade at a new school?
Oh my God, I'm in middle school. It was just a big shock. I was like, wow, I am moving up in the world. And it was really fun. And I was very stressed out, like very stressed out.
What were you stressed out about?
Just trying to see if I can fit in or not. So I was really stressed about that. If there was going to be piles on piles on piles of homework, like my friends say they are.
What makes a good first day of school?
A good first day is a kind of introduction to the classes, not getting right into things, but just like seeing how everything will work in the next years to come. And not too much homework, in fact none, so that way you can just relax at home and think about the day. And just overall, make it enjoyable.
If you were a teacher, how would you try to make an enjoyable first day for your students, whatever you were teaching? What would you try to do?
I would try to maybe do a game of some sort that has to correlate with the subject that we're learning. Have a little icebreaker for everyone to get to know each other, especially if it was the first class with those people.
Can you remember your worst first day of school?
My worst first day of school was probably my first day of school. I'm pretty sure I had to leave in the morning because I was just crying nonstop. I couldn't even speak English at the time.
Really?
I was only speaking Dutch.
Oh, man.
Which I now forgot. If this is going to any students, just enjoy it. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Until the second day of school.
Until the second day of school.
And this is senior Emily.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it changes every year, but generally, like, I'm just excited to be back and see everyone.
Do you feel the first day of school is the most important day of school?
No.
Why not?
I think that the first day is a good day to set intentions, but it's a lot of just, like, catching up with your friends.
What would be an ideal first day for you in a class that you didn't know the teacher, brand new subject for you?
I'm trying to think. I mean, it depends on, like, the class, but I think it's always cool to, like, hear teachers talk about what they're excited about and talk about, like, Kelly teaches physics, and she is just excited about astronomy. Like, genuine has that passion, and so that's really cool to see, and I think that's really important as a student to see that there is some greater application or greater idea that the content that you're learning in classes can have. I mean, that's always really important to me. And it's also is if you're new, then it's important to like hear people's names and kind of be able to like connect with people on some scale. But I always appreciate it when we don't get homework the first day. That's a good plus, but
didn't happen
this year. But
Caitlin also thought back to when she was a student in high school and tried to remember what her thought process was being at a new school on the first day as a ninth grader.
See, I don't really remember most of my first days, which makes me think that ultimately it's also not that important to students. Not important, but it's not going to make or break a year. I do remember my first year of high school because I had gone to public school my whole life up until that point. And I had asked my parents the year before, like if I could go to this private boarding school that was in town. I was a day student. So I remember going and being so excited and getting there and instantly feeling out of place. I did not have Vineyard Vines clothes. I didn't arrive in a limo. Some kids arrived to school in a limo, which was wild. So I remember instantly walking onto campus and being like, I've made a terrible mistake. But I found my people fairly quickly. Like I ended up being like a photography theater kid. So I found my vibe, but I just remember like the stark social economic contrast between me and the majority of other students there was really rough. And I think it kind of played into like how I responded in the classroom. Like I felt really self-conscious. And so I was super talkative in middle school. Like I would always offer an answer. And then in high school, it took a while to coax that back out of me. But I definitely do remember that first day feeling like that. But I also remember my teacher, specifically my English teacher. He was like the most eccentric man I had ever met to this day still. And I remember he sat down at his desk and he kind of watched like all of us come in and file in and kind of watched us sit down. Didn't say anything, didn't say hello, just kind of watched. And we're all in and we're all kind of like looking around and looking at him. And he goes, well, and then he flung himself out of his seat and jumped on the desk and kind of like froggy squatted on the desk. And he's like, all right, we're in it. We're in it to win it. We're going to do this. Get out a notebook. I want you to write me your life story. And he gave us 10 minutes to write our life story down. And then we had to stand up and read them out loud to each other. And I remember everyone was just like, I can't write anything in 10 minutes. And after each person, he'd be like, that's incredible. You are incredible. What an incredible story you have. I just remember being like, what is going to be the rest? And that was kind of the vibe of the rest of the year. Like every day was weird, but I definitely remember him jumping on the desk and me being like, I think I'm going to like this guy or I'm going to fear him. And I don't know which, and I'm kind of excited about that.
And what I appreciate about that story is not only the English teacher that kind of reminds you of Robin Williams and Dead Poets Society, but also just a reminder of the mindset that a lot of kids are coming into school with. The top of mind really is, where do I belong here? Where do I fit in? And I think a lot of the examples that were shared from the way that CJ would greet his students at the door and have them write these letters to themselves on the first day of high school, to the way Tara works to make sure that every student has a voice in the classroom on that first day, to the way that Caitlin wants to make sure that students don't have to feel like they're a science person to be able to be successful in this class. And Caitlin's eccentric high school teacher who communicated, "I think you're important and I think that you matter." And I think these are some of the aspects of what makes a good first day. They begin to communicate to the students, you matter and you have a place here. And apparently it doesn't hurt if you don't have homework on the first day. Thank you to all the guests that I had on this podcast. If you would like to keep up with CJ Reynolds, he's got a YouTube channel that you can just search Real Rap with Reynolds. Thank you to Tara Lynch. You can find her on Twitter at Tara Teacher, TeraTeacher. And Tara just came up with a book called Protocols in the Classroom, Tools to Help Students Read, Write, Think, and Collaborate.
It's aimed for teachers as a way to think about structuring their class so that there is a lot of student voice and so that these power dynamics do shift from the teacher being in charge and being the expert to the students taking on these roles.
And that Compass Points activity that she talked about is in there with is a student a north, a south, an east, or a west, as well as a ton of other strategies and protocols, a lot of which can be used on the first day. It's for K-12 teachers of any subject area, and you can find it on Amazon. And thanks to Caitlin for being on the show. Caitlin is not really on social media, so let me know if you'd like to get in contact with her. And I am Tom Gibson. You can find all other episodes of the Tom Gibson Podcast on my website, tomgibson.com, TheTomGibson. I'm also on YouTube and Twitter at GibsonEDU. I took a couple months off for the podcast over the summer, but I am going to be back to a once-a-month schedule, so be sure to subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher to stay in the loop for upcoming episodes. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you learned something today. I'll see you in the next one.